We're now going to call this Avos Perk Base Mishnah 2.5, although there are many versions of Pirkei Avos that has this still in the middle of 2.4. I broke it up because there's just so much to say over here that I want to keep it separate. And second of all, really this is an important structural juncture in the Mishnah, because we went from Moshe Rabbeinu in Mishnah 1.1, who was the beginning of the Masorah, to Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who was the last of the Tanaim. So that was the last Mishnah, or 2.4, the middle of 2.4, if that's what we're up to. And now we're going to retrace our steps, going back up to Hillel. Hillel, who we could call perhaps the first of the Tanaim, according to some kind of schematics. He's the father of the Tanaim. So before we traced his lineage through his direct descendants, who were the Nasiim, and now we're going to trace his Talmidim, his spiritual descendants, if you will. So instead of his son or grandson, we're going to now go to Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the founder of the Keren B'Yavne, what happened after the Chorban. He was the Nasi immediately after the Chorban of the Beis HaMikdash. So to get there, we go back to Hillel. Now, Hillel in the Gemara is portrayed in a number of times and places as being sort of like the paragon of humility. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu was the Anav Mikol Adam, he was the greatest of all time, but Hillel seems to have been, extraordinarily humble and Anav in his own right. So the way I see this Mishnah is essentially being a manifestation of Hillel's expertise, if you will, in mastering this Midah, and how he sees it sort of should be brought to bear, and the way one relates to the world around him. So the common thread of all these different points Hillel makes, as far as I'm concerned, has to do with the topic of anava, of humility. So let me explain for a second what humility is in the Torah's concept. And that's really important because in the panoply of different character traits that one could consider, anava, humility, as far as the Torah's hierarchy is concerned, is the most important. Moshe Rabbeinu, I said, is called the Anav Mikol Adam, the greatest Anav, humble person of all time. But that is the cause, not the effect of his greatness, right? So he was chosen to be Moshe Rabbeinu because he was such an Anav. When we think of Anava, of humility, we often think of someone who's like kind of meek and quiet, and as my grandma used to say, wouldn't say boo to a goose. She sort of stands in the corner and does nothing, does not stand out. And that's not quite right. In other words, you see from Moshe Rabbeinu himself, he went toe-to-toe with Paro. He was the king of the most powerful country in the world, and let him have it. So you see, he wasn't sort of a pushover, but he was an extremely humble person, an anav. So what does it mean to be an anav? So the definition, as far as I'm concerned, is someone who understands exactly who they are and who they're not. So they're not under any false impression in their own mind about their strengths or their weaknesses. They understand exactly who they are. And since Moshe Rabbeinu knew he had certain strengths, he brought those to bear, and he understood he had certain shortcomings and didn't try to hide them or wasn't insecure about them, he owned up to them, he lived with them, he accepted them, and he understood the reality of things. So the same is true by Hillel, the great Anav, and you see Hillel could say, Menikan HaKolkan, we discussed that before, if I'm here, everyone's here, but the point is Hillel understood that he was certainly very important to the Jewish people and didn't shy away from that. So here we're going to see different expressions of how one should be an Anav and relate to the world around them. And the first of the examples, of the cases, he says, Hillel's Omer, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibor, don't separate from the community. Now, to my mind, first of all, it's human nature. Every single person has felt this, sense of, stop the world, I want to get off. People are annoying. Mark Twain is attributed to have said, the more people I meet, the more I like my dog. We've all felt that way. It's just everyone's got their own ideas, and people have silly ideas, and people behave in silly ways, and it's frustrating. And we all kind of want to say, listen, I'd be better off, going out on my own, living on a mountaintop, getting away from this and doing my thing. And I have to deal with all these frustrating, difficult, silly people. Well, that's human nature. That's antithetical to the Torah's worldview. The Torah's worldview is that a person should see his identity as being part of the community. He is one of the Jewish people collectively, And that's where his significance lies. I talked before, I quoted the Rambam, who said, the one who's parish medarki at Tzibor, even if he has no specific sins, he has no place in Olam Haba. Right? The Torah was given to a collective, not to Avram Avinu or to Yitzhak or to Yaakov, but to an entire nation. And you're part of a nation and you dare not separate from it. That's a very important point, obviously. And I think it bespeaks such arrogance. A person, most of the time, need support from the community. We all needed the community when we were young. We needed support from others. And we will need it again, please God, when we get old. So it's sort of like the height of arrogance to say, okay, now I don't need the community, and I'll go out on my own. Yeah, but now they need you. Obviously, that's your good fortune, is so you can help be a support, so the other people who do need you, you can be there for them. And to distance yourself from them is a terrible crime. There are two basic stories in the Tanakh which illustrate this, from where this comes from. One is from Moshe Rabbeinu in the war with Amalek. So he didn't participate directly. He wasn't a soldier, but he was with the people the whole time, keeping his hands in the air. And as long as his hands were in the air, they succeeded. And when not, they weren't successful. The point is that he was with them in spirit all the time. He was with the Tzibur all the time, directing his heart and their hearts towards Avinu Shebashamayim up in heaven. The other story is the negative version of this is the story from the story of the Megillas Rus, the story of Naomi and her husband Elimelech, who were living in tough times and famine in Israel. And rather than, they were rich, so instead of supporting the community, they didn't want to become impoverished by all their tzedakah. They picked up and left. They moved to Moab, where it was sort of antithetical to, like, you know, Torah values, leaving the Jews back in Judea to fend for themselves. And obviously, if you read Rus, by the third pasuk already, everyone's dying. Elimelech, the boys, Machlon, Kilian, they're all dying for having forsaken the community. So that's no good. So a person needs to therefore participate in the community's joy and suffering. It's sort of empathy here. And this actually has halachic ramifications, okay? Important ramifications. I'll read you the Shulchan Aruch who paskins this, and the Mishnah Berurah, an important Magen Avraham. I'm reading from Hilchos Tainus Simen Taf Kuf Ayin Dalet, so that's 574 of the Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim, and Sif Hei says, Kol HaPoresh Min HaTzibor Eino Roa B'Nechamasan. Anyone who separates from the community will not see their nechama, not see their consolation. And V'Chol HaMitzar Imahem, anyone who empathizes, joins in their suffering, Zoche V'Roa B'Nechamasan, will have merit and will see their consolation. So the Mishnah Berurah here paskins that in terms of being mindful of the struggles the community is facing, it says, Davka b'davar sh'yuchol b'ulai lahoil. We're specifically talking about in a situation where a person has some way that he could possibly help the community. So like Moshe Rabbeinu, he raises hands and help people to pray. You could give tzedakah, you could give support, says the Mishnah Berurah. Hein b'tfila, whether we're talking about in praying. Hein b'tainas, whether you can fast with the people and do tshuva. Hein b'mamon, or you can donate tzedakah and give financial support. That's what you should do. Very importantly, the Magen Avraham, who's quoted here in the Shaar HaTzion, he says, Im enu yachol laho lilam klal, if the community is in distress or in danger, and you have no way to realistically help them, so then, al yamod b'makom sakana, you're not allowed to stick around if your life is in danger. That's not allowed. So you have to help, but if you can't be of definitive help, then you're not allowed to risk life either. So that would answer when you have to leave the war zone or flee from the persecutions if you can't be of help, because you're not entitled to stick around and join in the suffering of the community at risk to personal life. You're not authorized to do that, make that decision in truth. There are, of course, these famous stories from the Holocaust, Janusz Korczak and the like. Okay, these questions, if this actually happens to you, God forbid, it's above my pay grade. I'm not going to say what exactly you should do. You have to ask for guidance. But in principle, you should be with the community, but not if it means risking your life and you can't be of great help to them. That's a lucky bottom line. Now, that's the first thing. Now, the second thing that he says is, Va'al tamin ba'atzmacha, you shouldn't have literally, I guess, have faith in your in yourself. Ad yom moscha, until the day you die. So this essentially means don't be overconfident. Self-confidence is essential. You won't succeed in life unless you have self-confidence, and you gotta, you know the Anav knows who he is and what he brings to the table. But don't be overconfident. Don't fool yourself in thinking you are what you're not. Overconfidence is fatal, and therefore, you know, life is a struggle. The Jewish conception is a person has this like built-in yetzer hara, this drive that's, you know, to for self-destruction that allows them to have bechira, and the biggest risk that you can have to your spiritual success is being complacent. Complacency is really like the death knell of your spiritual advancement. So don't be complacent. Everyone's heard the metaphor. I'm not sure what the source is for it, if not for this Mishnah, that you know, life is like standing on a downward going escalator, and if you don't climb up, you're going down. Well, I don't know the source for it in halacha, but it's definitely true. It's definitely true that a person, you know, Hashem made the world with gravity. Things are pulled down. There's a thing called entropy. The world goes to disorder. Unless you're making effort to fight against that, so then it's gonna go badly. So therefore, the Mefarshim say this notion of not trusting yourself means, if you're talking about, you know, sin, overcoming the Yitzhar, just because you haven't done up to now, don't be overconfident that it won't happen to you. It applies to one's faith, emunah. Don't hang out with apikorsim, heretics, and the like, thinking that they won't affect you because you've managed so far. No. And also in just your good character, your midos. Just because you have, up to now, trained yourself to be refined, if you don't make an effort to continue to maintain that refinement, so then your character will degrade. The filter will come off. The behavior will not be as sterling as it could be. The famous example of this that the Bartonor brings here is that Gemara in Brachas Chav Tesam and Aleph that says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, he served for decades as the Kohen Gadol, and in the end he went rotten, became a tzaduki, a heretic. That's referring to John Hyrcanus, the Hasmonean king and Kohen Gadol who was a complicated person, and started out essentially doing great things for the Jewish people, but by the end went pretty bad. Okay, now the next thing that Hillel says is, "Va'al tadin es chavercha ad shetigia lemakomo." Don't judge your fellow until you reach his place, till you stand in his shoes. A familiar idea, and I think it's a corollary of the previous clause of the Mishnah, which basically says, you know, be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Everyone's on that downward escalator. Everyone, you know, has a Yetzirah. And it's not easy. Life is not easy. Now, that statement, as I described it, that's actually a quote from 1800s, Ian McLaren. But I think that if Hill could speak English, he would have said the same thing. Be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. And in terms of judging others, so there's a really great quote, an insight that Stephen Covey has in The Seven Habits. He says, "We judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their actions." And there's a great truth in that. And Hillary Clinton, I think, took it even to a more extreme version, which I think is also really true, unfortunately, which is we judge ourselves by our best intentions and we judge others by their worst actions. And while that's human nature, it's not right. It's not good. And Hill is saying to fight against it, to move in the opposite direction. You know, it's important, and I'm going to try to use words, I'm going to make some specific words here. It's important to not be judgmental. Now, I want to clarify, that doesn't mean you can't be, let's call it, discerning. We're not saying that you shouldn't have your own values and know right from wrong and have very definitive opinions on things. That's good. That's right and proper. But to be judgmental, which is what Hill is coming to say against, is to be, you know, condemning the other person, to feel superior to the other person, to write somebody off. That's what Hill is advising you not to do. And the reason why is because you should be kind. Everyone's fighting a hard battle. Just because, you know, you're looking at a person, he's probably doing his best. Okay, now it may be true that his best isn't very good. Okay, because that means that he, with his tool set, his life tool set, is obviously inadequate to really enable him to overcome the challenges he's facing. Now you also, at some point in your life, were younger and had a much diminished tool set and struggled to get through life. And then hopefully, you know, you learn more skills, more tools, and you became more competent. That's great, Baruch Hashem. But just because you are so blessed doesn't mean the other person is there yet. So I think that the sort of the paradigm to think about this part of the Mishnah is, you know, every parent who's been a parent to an adolescent, so your teenage kids invariably are going to do things you don't agree with that are foolish and self-destructive, and it's maddening, right? But just because you know what they're doing is so ill-advised and so self-detrimental and so perhaps wrong, that doesn't mean you can't still love them and care about them and support them, right? So that's what we're talking about over here. We're not saying you shouldn't say what something that someone is doing isn't a bad idea, isn't imprudent, isn't wrong. But we're saying in terms of your assessment of them as a person, understand that you just they're facing something that's tough for them, and you're not in the proper position. Shouldn't be one of superciliousness and arrogance and superiority, that you're in a position to sort of judge and condemn and dismiss someone else. Now, obviously, if the Hillel's mandate is you shouldn't judge a person till you stand in their shoes, you reach their place, so many point out that's impossible, of course. You'll never stand in their place exactly, because the life story of each person is unique, and the struggles they're facing started from the day they were born with the tools they were given and the brain they were given and the parents they were given and the upbringing they had and the school they went to and the way their children, childhood friends dealt with them and everything. So you'll never know what's going on in the backstory there. And therefore, you'll never be able to judge them. So Hashem gets to judge people, but we human beings are no place ever to be judgmental. Now, it's interesting that some Mefarshim speak out sort of unless you know. So I just want to speak out, I think, to the contrary. Let me give the exact kind of example. I remember 20 years ago, I had a conversation with a fellow chavrus of mine who was smoking, and I was busy telling him what an idiot he is and how self-destructive it is, and give him 101 reasons why he should stop smoking immediately. And his response to me, which was 100% correct, in fact, was, "You don't know. You've never been a smoker. You don't understand." And that's really true. In other words, it's absolutely true that if you haven't been a smoker, you don't understand what it means to be a smoker. And even though it might be 100% correct that smoking is a terrible idea and it's bad for you and self-destructive and everything else, yeah, but if you're a smoker, it's not so easy to give it up. And I think the Mishnah actually isn't saying, unless you know, because you did smoke and gave it up. To the contrary, I think the Mishnah is most directed towards the guy who was a smoker and gave up smoking. Because then he really thinks, I do know what it's like to be a smoker and give it up. Now I'm telling you, you're being an idiot. To the contrary, when a person smokes, for example, when a person has a learning disability, he's struggling with something, it's not one-dimensional. Obviously, the whole situation is multifactorial. There's a lot going on there. So just because you were able to give up smoking, that's because maybe your stress levels were different, maybe your brain chemistry was different, maybe your social circles were different. And just because you were able to give it up doesn't mean that the person who you're judging now could give it up. You're not necessarily wiser to their challenge just because you know about one dimension, the smoking itself. And that's true for all things. So again, Hillel's saying, be an anav, that's implicit, and don't judge others. I think the paradigm here, the classic paradigm that Mefarshim bring, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Beis, Amud Beis, 102b, where Rav Ashi is giving a shir. Rav Ashi, like basically the final editor of the Gemara here, the last generation of Amoraim, and he says to his Talmidim, tomorrow we'll be considering, our chaver, our chaverim, our colleagues, learned colleagues, the achav, the kings, these kings. Sorry, the mission there the mission there in Sanhedrin says there are three kings of Israel who have got a place in the world to come. Achav, that's Ahab, Yeravam, and Menashe. Okay, so Menashe, so that's the story. So we'll learn about these, our chaverim, our colleagues tomorrow. That night, Menashe comes to Rav Ashi in a dream and says, you think you're so smart, I'll ask you a couple questions, and Rav Ashi didn't know the answers. So Rav Ashi realizes that Menashe is a serious Talmid Chacham, so he says to him, if you're such a big Talmid Chacham, how in the world could you do all those terrible things that you did? Menashe was terrible, and he basically insinuated the Avodah Zarah idolatry so deeply into Israel, like we couldn't get out of it. So Rav Ashi says, well, how in the world, if you know so much, how could you sin so badly? And Menashe says, you don't understand. If you would be around in my time, if you had the drives that we had in terms of the Yetzer Hara, the drive to do these bad things, you would have like hiked up your skirt to like your toga to run faster to chase after the idolatry. Meaning, Rav Ashi, you just don't know what it was like. In our time, in our place, the challenges were different, and therefore you have no place judging me. Okay, that's the paradigm, and it's true for all of us in all our places. So be discerning, have your values, but really don't be judgmental, meaning dismissing, condemning, feeling superior to others. Okay, the next thing that Hillel said is V'al tomar davar she'i efshar lishamoa she'sofo lihishama. So there's a few girsos. The girsos, as I read it, is called the second pshat in the Bar Tanura, which is talking about divulging secrets. Al tomar davar she'i efshar lishamoa. Don't say something that's not supposed to be said, that's not to be heard. She'sofo lishama, because in the end it will come out, it will be heard. That's the pshat according to Rabbeinu Yonah, second pshat in the Bar Tanura. And it's about revealing secrets. Now, I believe here again that our Mishnah is being governed by the issue of anava. And so I really believe in my heart of hearts. The point here is that a person has no right to place his desires above and put his prioritize himself over others. That's bedrock what it means being anav, right? To think you're more important than other people. So to put your desire to share information that you have about another person, to gain attention, to feel important, to seem like you're the guy in the know, above your duty to maintain your confidence and your privacy for others, is terrible. Don't think you know better than other people about what should or shouldn't remain private. Don't respect other people's boundaries. Don't get in over your skis. As an arrogant person, if someone, has set boundaries, don't assume that you have a right to, your right to tell the information overrides their right to their privacy. Don't treat other people's private information like it's your social capital to spend. Appreciate that, they have a right to it too. So this is all about respecting other people and not feeling superior to them. Humility means knowing who you are and who you're not. You don't have the right to share information if it's not yours. You have to understand just because you've been entrusted to be a confidence information, it's not your information that you own to share, and don't put your needs in front of other people. That's the approach here that I prefer in the second pshat on the Bar Tanura. There's a different approach based on a slightly different girsa. Instead of a shin, there's a vav. So instead of reading, I'll have the whole thing inside. It says, Va'al tomar davar she'i efshar lishmoa. Don't say something which can't be Lishmo here mean understood, can't be understood. Visofo lishama. Instead of shisofo, it's visofo lishama. And in the end, it will be understood. So the idea here is this, according to that year, so it's like the first pshat in the Bar Tanura, it's a advice being given to teachers, educators, and saying, when you teach, be perfectly clear. Don't speak in a way where you say, listen, the students are responsible to think about what I said, and if they think about it long and hard, they'll understand what I really mean. They'll get to the depth of it. No, that's being totally arrogant. Your responsibility as a teacher is to meet the students on their level and then enlighten them, not to demand they come to your level and then hope that for the best, because obviously if you hope for the best, the students just may not be motivated or interested or capable of understanding what you meant, and they'll misunderstand, and then the next thing you know, they'll come up at Korsim, they'll think, no halacha is wrong, they'll do all sorts of wrong things. So don't be such a supercilious teacher to think that it's the responsibility of the child to get excited and make an effort to meet you and understand what you're saying. No, make it perfectly clear to them. Give it to them, like the Shulchan Aruch is called the Shulchan Aruch, like a set table. Put on a silver platter for them to understand exactly what you mean. Be clear and understand that the student is there, the teacher is there for the student, not the student for the teacher. Okay, the last part of the Mishnah is Va'al Tomar L'kishe efne eshne, shema lo tipane. Don't say, when I have spare time, then I'll study. Because maybe you'll never have spare time. Now, I think what Hillel is saying here, the simple level simply is that, life is complicated. Everyone of us know that every day new problems arise, new challenges arise. Social problems, political problems, health problems, parnasa problems, there's always challenges to deal with. So if you're hoping to resolve it all and then you'll be able to, sit down with peace and quiet and study and learn Torah, forget it. It just, that may never happen. To the contrary. So really this is Hillel's sort of version of Shammai's point that you have to osei sarascha keva, you make your Torah learning the fixed part of your life, the big rocks, and then work everything else around that. as opposed to waiting for things to be, you know, all as it should be. It's pretty arrogant to think that you're going to ever have control over life. Things should be just so. Things might never be just so. Life is complicated. And this is true, like, I think in the both, the Mephorshes speak out both the big picture and the little picture. The big picture is, don't say, listen, I'm going to, you know, make a lot of money and then I'll retire young and then I'll learn from full time when I'm 50. Don't say that, because don't kid yourself. It may not ever happen. By the time you're 50, you might not be well or have the headspace or it might not work out for the business in the first place. So that's a terrible mahalach. But also in the little picture, you know, your person has 5 minutes here and 10 minutes there of spare time. Don't say, well, I'm not going to sit and, you know, squeeze something in now. I'll wait till I have like a proper hour to think about things, 2 hours, I'll have a proper seder. Then I'll learn. For now, I'll just, you know, flick out my phone for a few minutes and just waste the time. No, don't do that. This is your big chance. You should look at those little moments where you're waiting in the bank and you're waiting in the line and you're waiting to pick up your kid from school. Those are your moments to make use of the time. They're little mini gifts, that little mini 5 minute gift that you can review something, think about something, you know, consolidate your thoughts, make your cheshbon and nefesh, take the mishnayos out of your pocket. If you're smart, wherever you go, you'll keep your book with you. So if you have 5 minutes because you're waiting, so then you'll take the 5 minutes to learn something. Keep going. Don't throw that opportunity out the window. Make use of those little moments. Don't say when you have a proper big time, you'll have, you know, that's terrible. There's a story I'll tell. I think it's a fairly famous story of Moshe Feinstein. So shortly after he made a siyum on Shas, he made another siyum on Shas, like, I don't know, 2 weeks later, let's say. So they asked him, what in the world, do you finish Shas in 2 weeks? So he said, no, I had a special Seder that whenever I was waiting around, you know, and I don't know, in a chasna and at the post office, whatever it is, so I took out my Shas and I marched on through Shas in all the little spare moments of waiting. And now I'm making a siyum, it's my, you know, special siyum for me because I reclaimed so much of my life which had been lost. I was able to finish Shas in those, you know, in those moments where I was had, so to speak, quote unquote, nothing else to do. So that's, of course, quite an accomplishment. And please God, we should reach that. But the point Hillel is saying here is, don't be so arrogant to think life's going to work out just so. No, accept life for what it is. Take every moment as it comes. Put first things first. Prioritize your learning and your personal growth and make deal with the problems and life's challenges around that. Don't wait for things to be perfect and smooth sailing before you attempt to do what's so important is to learn and grow and focus on your Talmud Torah.